Good morning.
Morning.
Would you please state your name for the record?
Maynette Ellingson.
Where do you live?
Missoula, Montana.
Were you a delegate to the 1972 Montana Constitutional Convention?
I was.
And where were you born and raised?
I was born in Wells, Texas, and raised there until I moved to Montana in 1967.
What was your first experience in Montana back in 1967?
Well, I actually came to Montana on my honeymoon in 1966 and vacationed at Glacier Park or outside Glacier Park because it was still winter. And my impression of this is the most beautiful place I've ever seen.
And when was it that you moved back to Missoula on more or less a full-time basis?
I moved to Missoula initially in 1967. And then my husband took a job flying helicopters in Alaska, and so we moved to Alaska for about 6 months in 1968, and then he was killed in January of 69, so I moved back to Missoula then to continue my education at the University of Montana.
In the that 1960s period of time, what was the air like living in Missoula?
Well,
and I would point to a demonstrative here if it's at all useful to you in consistent with your experience.
Well, when I first moved there in 1967, I lived in Marriott student housing, which was about the unit I lived in was about 2,000 yards, I think, away from Mount Sentinel, and there were days where you simply could not see any place. I mean, I could not literally see the mountain from my kitchen window.
Did you respond to that air quality condition in any way?
Well, I did. I started calling into a local talk radio show that was going on in Missoula, and there had been an organization formed called Gals Against Smog and Pollution, or GAS, and I joined that group and actually marched around the former world of pulp mill. It was the first time I'd ever done anything like that.
You mentioned that you returned to Missoula following your husband's death in the helicopter crash. What did you do upon your return to Missoula in 1969 from Alaska?
Well, when I left, I was in my junior year at the university. So I completed my undergraduate degree in student teaching, and then I started working on a graduate degree in political science. So I did that in 1971 and 72.
Circling back to your answer that you became a delegate to the Constitutional Convention, how did that come about?
Well, my professor, Ellis Waldron, Dr. Ellis Waldron, he taught state and local government law, and I was working as on a work study program with him where I was preparing a handbook for state and local government officials. And he had been involved with the preparatory work for the Constitutional Convention, which the voters of Montana had approved in 1969. And he asked me or suggested that I run for the Constitutional Convention because he thought I was a good student. He thought I knew and was learning about what should be in the Constitution, and he thought I'd be a really good delegate.
Mm-hmm.
So he encouraged me to run.
So you had a good mentor.
I had a very good mentor. It made a big difference.
Was there a minimum age for delegates to be elected to the Constitutional Convention?
There was. It was 24, and I had turned 24 in June of 19. What year was that?
72.
1971, and so the election for the delegates was in the fall of 1971.
Great. Did you have a platform that you ran on?
Well, I did. There were probably three or four really big issues for me. One of them was the Equal Rights Amendment for women. Second one was probably basic quality education for students in Montana to be funded by the state. And probably third and most important, or equally important, was environmental protection for our state.
Were the elections nonpartisan?
No, they were partisan. The legislature authorized 100 delegates to be elected and could run as Republican, Democrat, or independent, or new party.
And so in Missoula, how many delegates were allotted to Missoula County?
There were 100 delegates in all, and Missoula County was allotted eight delegates.
And the delegates came from all across the county?
Oh, the 100 delegates came across from Montana, yes, and elected by multi-member districts. It wasn't until after the Constitutional Convention that we had single-member districts. So in Missoula, the 64 of us that sought the eight seats had to run within the full county.
Directing your attention next to the PowerPoint. What is that?
Well, that's the official photograph of the full convention as we were seated in Constitutional Hall.
And where were you seated?
Well, at that point, my name was Mann Robinson. We were seated alphabetically, so I was on the next to the last row, second seat in from the right.
Was that protocol of seating, as opposed to traditional seating by party, of any significance?
It was interesting. At the beginning of the convention, the parties caucused, and they caucused for the purpose of electing leadership. But shortly after, really, and I think our first full plenary session, it was decided that we would seat ourselves alphabetically. And that was occasioned in part, I think, by the number of independents who also felt that they needed to be equally represented. And where would they be if the Democrats and the Republicans decided to divide themselves up on either side of the aisle? So very early on, really from the beginning, we sat ourselves alphabetically and remained that way throughout the entire convention.
And do you think that it affected the civility and the nature of the discourse during the course of the convention?
Well, I hadn't really had experience with anything else other than, you know, watching our legislature in this, in the 1969 session and 1971 session. And it certainly seemed to me, as well as the other delegates, that it would be a more collegial atmosphere if we sat next to one another, Democrat, Republican, and Independent alike.
I want to fast forward just a little bit and direct your attention to the next demonstrative exhibit on the screen and ask you to explain how the transcripts of the Constitutional Convention were preserved and made accessible for use by the public and the courts following the Constitutional Convention.
Well, initially, the legislature appropriated only $500,000 for the full convention, and at the end of the convention, there was only $40,000 left. So there was not initially any money to record or do the transcripts of proceedings, but there had been a oral record kept by three different entities. There was a press entity that was the official recording there was a journal kept every day. And so at the end of the convention, Lucille Speer, the oldest delegate from Missoula, who was a documents librarian, she started trying to transcribe the oral history into writing. And she at the time was 74 and her eyesight was failing, and it seemed like a task that couldn't be done. So we requested an appropriation from the legislature, and the legislature did appropriate money. And so a recorder was hired, a transcriber was hired to transcribe the verbatim transcript with no editorials, no corrections at all. It's just a verbatim transcript.
And just to clarify, there was an editing and publishing committee then formed. And to confirm, you were one of the five members that supervised and approved the editing and publication of the proceedings, including the transcript.
Yes, although I will say there was very little editing, and I wish there had been a lot more. So my run-on sentences and could have been corrected, and a lot of other delegates wish there had been some editing too. But we reviewed it, certainly, but there was really no editing per se.
Directing your attention next to the PowerPoint, how many delegates were women?
19 out of 100.
And am I correct in understanding that that's you?
That's me. Yes.
Were women delegates empowered as committee chairs and officers of the convention?
Yes. Interestingly enough, the women who were there even though they were never state legislature at any given time until the Constitutional Convention. The women, by and large, many had served as city council people, mayors, county commissioners, so they were very knowledgeable and very experienced in governmental matters. And so the Western vice president was Dorothea from Bozeman. The secretary of the convention was Jean Bowman from Billings. Louise Cross from Glendive was the chairman of the Natural Resources Committee. Margaret Warden was chair of the Public Relations Committee. women played a very vital role throughout the entire convention.
You were the youngest delegate. Were there other delegates? And did you find yourselves coalescing around certain issues?
There were a number of young delegates. The average age was 50, but there was myself at 24. There was a delegate from Anaconda who was 25, a delegate from Great Falls who was 26, and there was someone 28 and 30. So there were a number of young people in the Constitutional Convention.
Going through some of the historical descriptions, I heard the term Young Turks used to describe that group of delegates. Can you tell us about that?
We did find that there was a community of interest, by and large, of the younger delegates, and it's certainly centered around the environment. It's centered around voting. A lot of young people wanted to authorize or mandate poll booth registration. That was a big issue at the time. Certainly equal rights was a very big issue that younger people coalesced around.
How did the delegates go about suggesting particular matters to be included in the new Constitution?
There were several ways. First of all, citizens were invited to send proposals, and the convention received over 1,800 suggestions from citizens. And then the delegates ourselves were able to submit delegate proposals on any topic or issue that we felt should be included in the Constitution. So I think there were over 178 delegate proposals that were submitted.
It appears that first among the delegates' proposals was a proposal for a new, and this was brought forth by the delegates themselves, a proposal for a new constitution section establishing public policy on environmental quality.
Yes, and actually I think there were four or five separate delegate proposals that proposed the right, that proposed various environmental provisions, and the right to a clean and healthful environment came in one proposal later. All of these delegate proposals, as they came in, were referred to a subject matter committee for consideration by that committee. And they would maybe rework the language, get it in a form to put it in their committee report or reject the proposal or whatever. But there were public hearings on every delegate proposal and on every article of the Constitution.
Directing your attention next to the demonstrative exhibit, which is the proposed preamble to the 1972 Constitution. Did you participate in the drafting of the preamble?
I did. Fellow Missoula delegate Bob Campbell and I submitted a proposal for the preamble, and there were several other proposals submitted as well. They were all referred to the Bill of Rights Committee, and the gist of our proposal was what made it into what I think is the beautiful preamble to our Constitution.
Would you read it for us?
We, the people of Montana, grateful to God for the quiet beauty of our state, the grandeur of our mountains, the vastness of our rolling plains, and desiring to improve the quality of life, equality of opportunity, and to secure the blessings of liberty for this and future generations, do ordain and establish this Constitution.
Does it reflect the values and concerns that you ran on to become a delegate?
What I think is so unique about this Constitution is its reference to the land that inspired all of the 100 delegates. Most constitutions do not refer or seem to take inspiration from the place. And that was so important, I think, to this whole convention for every part of the state was a love of their unique heritage through the landscape of Montana. And certainly the values, the quality of life, the quality of opportunity, blessings of liberty, those are so well represented, I think, in our educational article and in our Bill of Rights, because most commentators about our Constitution say that we have the strongest Bill of Rights and protections for individual citizens than any other state constitution.
I'd like to direct your attention next to the PowerPoint slide, which is Article 9, Section 1 of the Constitution. Could you read that for us?
The state and each person shall maintain and improve a clean and healthful environment in Montana for present and future generations.
Could you describe for us how that provision came about?
The Natural Resources Committee recommended out both a majority report and a minority report. And the majority report that came out did have an environmental article, but it did not have descriptors of what kind of environment Montana would have. It just said the state shall maintain and improve an environment. And I think most of us who had really worked hard for a strong environmental article felt that there needed to be some modifiers in to seek protection for, that we wanted an environment that was clean and healthful. So it was a fairly long and contentious debate to ultimately get the words clean and healthful included as descriptors of the environment.
I'm going to direct your attention next to the next demonstrative exhibit from the transcripts that you and your committee compiled. And during this vigorous debate that you described about the meaning of clean and healthful, was there a discussion as to who would be able to tell us what these terms mean?
There was objection to inserting clean and healthful because the question is, well, what do they mean or what does that mean? And certainly by this being a constitution, a basic document, we were not going to go into detail about what that meant. And if you look at the second part of Section 1 in Article 9, it talks about the legislature shall provide for the administration and enforcement of this duty, and the legislature shall provide adequate remedies for the protections of the environment. So it was my thought initially that, well, the legislature would attempt in their obligation to implement this provision would have a duty to define what a clean and helpful environment was. And then if they didn't do it, then obviously the courts would, if a lawsuit were brought to the courts about whether the legislature was honoring their obligation under the Constitution, that the courts would ultimately decide, as they do on so many of the other rights that we have in the Constitution.
Thank you. Directing your attention next to the PowerPoint image, I think we're all aware that you are frequently quoted by the Montana Supreme Court in terms of its decisions on the clean and healthful environment. And this quotation comes from the case of Montana Environmental Information Center versus Department of Environmental Quality from 1999. And it includes the following: delegates such as Mahan, Robinson, who agreed in substance with the preceding statements by Delegate McNeil, suggested amendments, but only for the purpose of assuring greater protections of the current environment. Delegate Robinson stated, quoting from the transcript he compiled, "I contend that if you're really trying to protect the environment, you better have something whereby you can sue or seek injunctive relief before the environmental damage has been done. It is very little good to pay someone monetary damages because the air has been polluted or because the stream has been polluted if you can't change the condition of the environment once it has been destroyed." Montana Constitutional Convention Transcripts, Volume 5, at 1230, March 1st, 1972. First, as a compiler of the transcripts of the convention, is this an accurate statement of the proceedings?
Yes, it is.
And did this position, which I've quoted from the transcripts, carry the day in terms of securing the inclusion of the term clean and healthful in the Constitution?
Yes, I think this was implemented in two ways, certainly by inclusion of the definition, the definitions, and then also by the fact that the right to a clean and healthful environment was inserted in the Declaration of Rights. The big concern for me at that time was there were a lot of things going on nationally, like the sequoia trees were being cut in California, and the issue was for anybody to bring a lawsuit to affect the environment or to protect the environment had to show monetary damage. And that whole issue was of much significance because citizens like us, like this future generation, may not be able to show, or probably wouldn't be able to show, a monetary damage as a result of the destruction of the river, the dirty air, so on. So it was important, I think, for this Constitution to make clear that citizens could enforce their right to a clean and healthful environment and not wait until the pollution or the damage had been done.
You mentioned also that this clean and healthful environment provision found its way not only into Article 9, but Article 2. How did that come about?
The Bill of Rights report came after the report on the natural resources article. And during the debate on the Bill of Rights article, Delegate Burkhart from Helena moved that the right to a clean and healthful environment, because we had debated and had established it in Article 11, or I mean, I'm sorry, Article 9, that it can be inserted as one of the inalienable rights in the Bill of Rights, Section 3. And interestingly enough, that passed by a vote of like 78 to 17. It was a pretty overwhelming support, having established it over the Natural Resources article to move it to the Bill of Rights.
You were the youngest constitutional delegate, although there were others that were also young. Were there concerns for the constitutional rights of Montanans that were not yet adults?
There was. There were three separate delegate proposals that sought to create a provision in the Constitution that would recognize the rights of persons under the age of majority, which was established at 18 at the time. And the goal there was to guarantee that they had the same rights as adults, unless there were laws that sought to protect them in other ways.
And so Article 2, Section 15 in the Declaration of Rights is the result of that concern and that effort by the delegates?
Yes. Yes. And this section was adopted pretty overwhelmingly. There was a very effective effort with the Council on the Rights of Young People that were very strongly advocating for this. Mm-hmm. And so it was very well accepted on the convention floor.
And so would it be fair to say that this reflects a special concern for making sure that Montana's youth had, at the very least, all of the fundamental rights of adults?
Yes, that was a stated purpose.
Directing your attention to the next PowerPoint image, what is this a photo of?
Well, this is a photograph of me signing the Constitution after it had been approved by all 100 delegates. This is on the final day of the convention. And the woman sitting next to me is June Bowman, the secretary of the convention. And the roll was called alphabetically, and each delegate marched up to the front of Convention Hall, which is the House Chambers, and signed the document.
Do you have any memories of this moment that you could share with us this morning?
Well, I look pretty happy in the picture, and it was certainly a very proud moment. It, up until the time my name was called, it had been a very solemn procedure. You could have heard a pin drop. And then when my name was called, there was all this cheering and clapping. And I was just really overwhelmed. And I think it was really in recognition of the fact that I had been nominated by the press as one of the most 10 most influential delegates. And I also think it was just a recognition that a young person could make such a positive contribution to the Constitution.
Why were you willing to serve as a witness in this case?
Pardon?
Why were you willing to serve as a witness in this case?
Well, I'm proud. I'm proud of this Constitution. I'm particularly proud of the right to a clean and healthy environment and a very strong Bill of Rights. I support and encourage the young people of our state to be involved in our stay. And I'm just honored. There are only 9 of us 100 delegates remaining. And so I'm honored that I'm able to be here and share my thoughts about this important part of the Constitution.
Thank you. No further questions.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Mark Sturmitz. I represent the state of Montana. Man, you had a long career as an attorney following your session with the Montana Constitution Convention, correct?
I did.
How long did you practice law?
36 years.
What, did you have a specialty?
I did. I was a public finance lawyer in state of Montana and was my primary client.
And just real quickly, what sort of things did that involve doing as an attorney?
It involved a number of things over the course of my career. It certainly just sort of straightforward bond issues. When the legislature had authorized the state to incur debt, I would do the legal work, give the approving opinion to the purchasers of the bonds. It also enabled me to assist the state in establishing a number of financing programs, such as the Municipal Finance Consolidation Act, the Montana Economic Development Bond Act, 2 revolving fund programs for wastewater and water programs through the DNRC, and a couple of other programs through the Board of Investments. And then also I helped develop some insurance programs for municipalities and counties.
You mentioned earlier in your testimony that the Clean and Healthful Environment Commission that you discussed, you thought would have cases from the Montana Supreme Court that would further define it or implement it. Do you remember that testimony?
I do, yes.
Have you tracked those, many of you have seen those cases over the years?
Not so much. Usually people say, did you know you were quoted in that case? And I'd say, no, I didn't know that. I was really pretty busy focusing on my municipal finance practice and raising 2 boys.
Are you aware that this trial involves the Montana Environmental Policy Act?
Yes, I am. Yes, I am. To some extent, I'm not an expert about it, but I do realize that that is part of the complaint.
Do you have any understanding of what the Montana Environmental Policy Act does and actually how it functions?
I do have a little bit, but I certainly wouldn't say an expert at it. But certainly a lot of projects that I worked on financing over the years had to go through an environmental review under NEPA.
Would you agree that authorizes or requires the state to analyze environmental impacts of the decisions, permitting decisions made by state agencies, for example, air permits, water permits, that kind of thing?
Yes, that's my understanding of it, yes.
Do you know how the Supreme Court, Montana Supreme Court, has treated the connection between the Clean and Healthful Environment Division and permit made by the state of Montana? And by that, I mean, for example, a permit to have a lot. Do you know how the Montana Supreme Court has interpreted the impact of the Clean and Healthy Environment Provision on a decision like that? That is the key of mine.
I don't know in any detail about that, really. I mean, I do know that from time to time, different permits have been challenged and where they've been properly analyzed. I don't mean, but I know that sometimes that makes its way to district court and the Supreme Court, but I don't really know much about the details of those cases.
Would you have any reason to disagree with me if I said, for example, that in 2021, the Montana Supreme Court ruled in the Clark Fork Coalition versus Montana Department of Natural Resources case regarding a lease for strip mining that it did not offend the Clean and Healthy Environment Provision because because the lease itself did not authorize any environmental degradation, only the right to mine the minerals under the lease land, if and authorized under various state and federal law permit requirements, including the land. Does that sound right to you?
I'm going to object.
I don't really know.
Might I object, Your Honor, interject an objection on the basis of foundational work?
Well, I'll answer this. You don't know, you don't.
Yeah, I really don't know. I'm not so familiar with that case, though.
The 1972 constitutional convention was, we all of a certain age, hate to admit, it's a long time ago. Do you have an impression about how, if at all, Montana's economy and the segments of its economy have changed since 1972? I'm talking about major sectors of the economy, you know, generally speaking.
I certainly am no expert on any of that. I mean, I do know just from observation that the tourism industry has grown significantly. I know that a lot of people seem to want to live here with the housing shortages that we have everywhere. I do think that just probably what everybody else knows too, I mean, there's certainly been an increase in technology industry and in the healthcare. There would be times I would be called upon in writing a prospectus for the state of Montana and its bond offerings, and we need to describe the economy, and it certainly seemed that healthcare was increasingly becoming the major driver or major employer anyway, but, you know, I just probably know generally what most other people know if they know.
Okay, right. Just one example about industries come and go, and their activities come and go over that long period of time. Did you agree with that statement?
Yes.
The picture that was shown of the Horn of Baldor facility, for example, shows a facility that no longer exists in Montana, correct?
Well, the business no longer exists, but the facility does, and it's been the paper the last 2 days about who's responsible for cleaning it up and when it's going to be cleaned up. And it's been shuttered. That business has been shuttered for a really long time. I do know that. But the facility and it's the environmental damage did is still there.
And you're talking about the water quality situation there, right?
Yes.
Air emissions that are shown in the picture, and I grew up in Missoula, so I know exactly what you're talking about. That source is no longer there, right?
Exactly. It's not. Thank goodness Yeah.
Thank you, Mina. That's all I have.
Thank you.
Any reader that?
No, Your Honor.
All right. Maybe you're excused.